This is Backseat Box Office, episode number 247, for the weekend of November 13th through November 15th. Hey, this is Jeff.
And this is Art.
And we are the Backseat Producers, and you are listening to Backseat Box Office. How's it going, Art?
It's going good. It's still really nice down here in Texas. I don't know what it's like out your way. You know, California is very nice as well, but we're still having days in the 80s here in November. We actually went swimming on Veterans Day.
Yeah, so I saw your photo that you posted to Facebook of the pool. And just before I saw that picture, my buddy who lives in Colorado was snowed in. So
nice.
There's that. So I don't know. Is Stingray still in Colorado?
No clue.
Yeah. All right. Well, so for those of you that are enduring cold weather, I feel for you, even though I personally have not ever done that. So. Yes, so this is Backseat Box Office, where we will talk about movies, and usually what we start off with is what happened in the box office last week. So let's move over to that, and I have to click one thing. Okay, here we go. For the weekend of November 6th through November 8th, here is the top five from last weekend. At number one, we have Spectre. James Bond is back at $70.4 million. At number two, the Peanuts movie brought in $44.2 million. At number three, and the next three are just holdovers, The Martian at $9.1 million, Goosebumps at $6.8 million, and at number five, Bridge of Spies at $5.8 million. And there's your top five. So nothing too crazy.
No, Spectre underperformed a little. They were predicting 80.
Right.
So that's a little bit of underperformance. Peanuts, that's a respectable showing. I mean, for a first weekend.
I think it's a very good showing. In addition to that, this is a weekend that the studios are happy about because, you know, last 3 weeks I think we had a couple number one movies in like the teens.
Yeah.
And like 3 weeks ago, it was like a 20-something million, even though it wasn't any wide releases that were at the top. So, but yeah, we'll have to see how Spectre does after that first week. Because, you know, Skyfall did great. And, you know, critical reception-wise, I don't know if it's necessarily any better or worse than Skyfall. So we'll just have to see how well it does. All right, so that was last weekend. So let's look ahead to this weekend as far as new movies. And so, Art, why don't you tell us about the first of two movies we're going to talk about?
Okay, well, first up on our list is The 33. It is 35% rotten on the tomato meter. 90% want to see it. The true story of the 2010 collapse of a Chilean mine and the rescue of the 33 miners who were trapped underground for 69 days. Rated PG-13 for a disaster sequence and some language. It is a drama directed by Patricia Riggin, written by Jose Rivera, Miko Alane, Craig Borton, and Michael Thomas. Runtime, 2 hours. So we have Antonio Banderas, Rodrigo Santoro, Juliette Binoche, Martin Sheen, James Brolin, Lou Diamond Phillips, and that's all the names I recognize.
Gabriel Byrne?
Where would I know him from?
Oh, you would recognize him, and as I click on the link, I can tell you what he's been in because I can't remember.
He looks kind of familiar in the thumbnail, but oh, okay, yeah.
Oh my God, I'm looking through his
known for
Usual Suspects. That's the only one I can remember. He's been in a ton of movies that I have no idea.
Yeah,
that they were even made. So Yeah, so historical drama. Oh, and I will say that one of the random names, I think if it's the same guy, Juan Pablo Raba, is on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. right now.
Oh, okay.
He looks familiar. He looks familiar. Yeah, so this is a wait for video, right?
Yeah, for sure. If even then, this really isn't my thing, the whole real life disaster thing. Yeah, like that, the one where the guy had to cut off his own arm.
Oh, right. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
157 hours or something,
Right.
190, whatever, you know. Just not really my thing.
The one with Franco, right? James Franco?
Yes, the one with James Franco, exactly.
Right. All right. Well, I guess that was we talked about as much as the description because it is what, one sentence.
One
So,
sentence, yeah.
real quick one there. All right. Next, we're going to go with some more traditional fare. Now we have Love the Coopers. This is 23% on the tomato meter. Out of 31 reviews, 7 fresh and 24 rotten, and not 4,000 Rotten Tomato users, and 93% want to see it. So here's the description. Love the Coopers follows the Cooper clan as four generations of extended family come together for their annual Christmas Eve celebration. As the evening unfolds, a series of unexpected visitors and unlikely events turn the night upside down, leading them all toward a surprising rediscovery of family bonds and the spirit of the holiday. PG-13 for thematic elements, language, and some sexuality. This is a comedy directed by Jesse Nelson, written by Steven Rogers. Starring Olivia Wilde, Amanda Seyfried, Marissa Tomei, Diane Keaton, some guy named Jake Lacy, John Goodman, Anthony Mackie, Alan Arkin, Ed Helms, and June Squibb. It seems like Alan Arkin, you can't have a dysfunctional family without Alan Arkin in it. Maybe it's just me, but
No, that yeah, about sums it up.
so yeah, I don't know about this one either. This, 23% is pretty low with a movie with, this number of, I don't know, stars.
Yeah, that's kind of bad. I mean, there's some names I love to watch here.
Yeah, so Stephen Whitty from the Newark Star-Ledger says there are too many characters, frankly, and most of them are bores. And we will bookend that with Tom Russo from the Boston Globe. Enjoy the sense of never quite knowing when the movie is going to stick another pin in its balloon of sincerity, and you'll like the Coopers well enough. And that is actually referred to as a good review. But yeah, so this is another wait for video.
This is another Spectre and Peanuts are going to stay number one and number two for next week.
If I had to pick movies that I'll go to the theater for, it would probably be The Martian number one, Spectre, Peanuts movie, Bridge of Spies, before I watch this.
Right.
All right, so that was what's coming out this weekend at the box office. So, Art, why don't you kick us off for share time? This is the part of the show where each host basically talks about what they've been doing in themselves as far as movies, TV, games, knitting. I don't know. I'm stretching here. All right. Art, what do you got?
All right. Well, first off, I don't know if we talked about it in show, but the Inside Out watching the Star Wars trailer. You sent me a link for that, and I did watch that, and that was really cute. I watched the. I don't know why I watched it, but it came up in my feed. You remember I talked about being not exactly underwhelmed with the new full Star Wars trailer. And it just, it didn't evoke the same sense of emotion from the first teaser trailer. And for some reason in my feed, one of the international trailers came up, and it was a little longer and it had some other scenes, and I don't know what it was, but I got that feeling again watching the I think it was like the second international trailer from Japan or something. I don't know.
I
It
do
was.
believe it was the Japanese drone.
Right. And I don't know what it was, but I was like, ah, I'm back in. I don't know what was different. It was a little longer, had a few other things in it. I don't know, but it grabbed me again, and I just thought that was kind of funny. I went out and I watched the full Jessica Jones trailer. I know we talked about it, but I hadn't actually watched it last week. And I am definitely all in for that when that finally drops, which is at this point 8 days away. 8 days away.
Mm-hmm.
Leading into that, knocked down a couple more episodes of Daredevil with Brittany. So she's still enjoying that. We did sidetrack for a moment, and we watched the first episode of iZombie. You remember that one? The mm-hmm. doctor who gets turned into a zombie, but she still has, like, control of her faculties, blah, 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 blah.
And she's on the one on CW?
Yes. I think is I'm watching it on Netflix, so.
Okay.
I really enjoyed it. I will be watching the rest of what is available on Netflix and going from there. Let's see, what else? We talked about what was coming to Netflix a couple weeks back, and I remember mentioning the SpongeBob movie was on the list. Me and Aubrey watched the SpongeBob movie, the 2012 or 13? Not the newest one where they come into this world, but the one before that. And she absolutely loved it. Couldn't get enough of it. She's probably going to watch it again. I will not be watching it again. I watched it once, and that was enough. We have been on open season spree. So open season one and open season three. We were at the bookstore. She'd been watching one and they had two and three. I said, well, let's buy two. She's like, no, I want three. I'm like, but that's the wrong order. So we now have open season one and open season three, and open season two is still sitting at the bookstore. The first one was enjoyable. The second one was just kind of meh. It was a cash-in kind of sequel. I'll have to wait and see what I think of two. And I think that about wraps it up. I'm sure I'm forgetting something. Let me check my actual notes right quick. I have my written notes and I have my digital notes. But I really think that wraps up everything. Yes. So that is it for my share time, sir. Tell me what you've watched.
Okay, first a comment on the international trailer. It seemed like they showed more dialogue between characters in this one.
Okay.
Especially what looks like an introduction between Rey and BB-8 as they're walking across the dune.
Right.
Whereas the second full trailer that got that was all over YouTube, just seemed like it was just going from shot to shot to shot, and you had more voiceover, and you didn't really see a whole lot of two characters talking to each other kind of thing.
Okay.
So that was different. It really didn't move the needle for me, other than the one that we've seen already.
Right.
Kind of thing. But again, we're getting into Age of Ultron territory, that it seems like every day we're finding out about a new thing.
Right.
Like Disney is retiring, or they're not going to acknowledge the slave Leia from Return of the Jedi.
Yeah. And now
they're not going to refer to her as princess in the new movie. She's now General Leia kind of thing. So,
well,
I need to stop looking, but again, the first full TV commercial I hear hit ABC tonight. So, yeah, I just can't stop. So, anyways, as to your question about what did I watch last week, I watched a couple movies, and I'm going to talk about the two movies I got from the library. The first one, this movie's called Outside Bet. The only person you probably heard of, Bob Hoskins, is in this movie, and it's set in the 1980s. In England, I believe it's England, it might be in Great Britain somewhere, but it's basically just this group of guys and women that basically hang out at the pub most of the time or after work, and there's an opportunity to buy a horse. And some of them think it's a terrible idea, but there's one ideological guy or idealistic that thinks that they should all buy it. And he ends up winning out, and they really don't have the money to pay for a horse or to have it run races and that for it to make money and be a big famous horse. And, you know, it, It's really, I was thinking after I watched the movie about the difference between it being like a European film versus, you know, if they made it in America. Like if they made the same kind of story in an American movie, there would be like a bunch of comic things that would happen, you know, to the horse or for certain things. But this movie, they kind of got heavy and it got into some labor strife. And it really drove home that these people don't make a lot of money and they're really lower class people. And they really need something good to happen with this horse. And it does, of course, you know, it's a movie kind of thing. But I enjoyed it. It definitely is a movie that I'm glad I watched at home because I probably wouldn't have been able to follow the dialogue without the subtitles. I mean, because usually, like, you know, with Harry Potter, it wasn't that bad.
Right.
But it seems like there were a couple of dialogues, or not dialogues, but accents in this movie that were kind of hard to follow. So, you know, it wasn't the greatest movie I've ever seen about horse racing, but I did enjoy seeing the differences between American horse racing and, you know, English horse racing. English being, you know, in England or Great Britain. And, you know, there were a couple of, you know, there were some surprises, but, you know, I doubt it'll ever be on broadcast television, but if you get a chance to check it out, I definitely enjoyed it. It was just different. I know it's not a movie that I've, you know, the type of movie I haven't seen before. It was different, but they really didn't, you know, reinvent the wheel or anything. So it's, I definitely enjoyed it. All right. Now, I kind of picked Outside Bet because I like Bob Hoskins. This movie I picked up, and I usually do not watch horror movies, but I enjoy Olivia Wilde. And so if I see if she's in any movies, I will try to check the movie out. I understand she was in Meet the Coopers, which means I'll probably have to watch Meet the Coopers.
I was just going to say that.
All right. So, no, I was anticipating your question here. Okay. The Lazarus Effect also has Mark Duplass from The League.
Right.
He is in it. And I keep hearing about how he is kind of a mover and shaker as far as independent movies are concerned. So I was interested to see, you know, if I don't think that he was creatively, like he wasn't a producer, and I don't know if he, you know, if he wrote anything or anything, but this is basically your typical horror movie. Also it had, Donald Glover from, Troy from Community was in this. Evan Peters, who was Quicksilver in the last X-Men movie, he was in this, and it was nice to see him where he wasn't walking around in slow motion. Trying to think, there's one other actress, but I can't remember her name. I think it's Sarah Bulger is her name. So it's basically a bunch of scientists, and they are trying to bring people back from the dead. Not necessarily people, just a dog. But for some reason, they have to bring Olivia Wilde back, because there was kind of a freak electrical accident, and they bring her back, but she's not right. And then that's when you just unleash all the horror tropes. I enjoyed it. It was probably better than what you'd see on Sci-Fi Channel kind of horror movie. It's just under an hour and a half, so it's not going to, you know, it's not going to be this big long movie. Was it scary? I didn't think it was too scary. It's not very gory. There's a lot of suspense with this movie. But I'd have to say, you know, if you're a horror movie fan, you might want to check this out. Even though I don't watch low horror, maybe you'll probably catch on a lot of tricks or cliches that, you know, most horror movies have. So, but I enjoy it. So that's the Lazarus Effect. Okay, those are two movies I watched. My son last night made me watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and it seemed like that we got to kind of a milestone Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because they wrapped up one storyline. And I was talking to a buddy of mine, and he said he completely didn't see that coming. But I am really enjoying Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. My son was sufficiently scared because he, excuse me, he is scared of Lash. And I think that, you know, they're doing a good job of making things interesting and not just doing all this exposition to start setting up, you know, storylines are going to pay off later, or making sure they're laying groundwork for civil war, which is what they'll probably start doing sometime. The other show that he made me watch last night was we watched the latest episode of Star Wars Rebels. Probably my favorite episode ever since the show has started. And I'm going to say why. Because it was very starship heavy. And as someone that owns probably more ships than I should in the X-Wing miniatures game, I just ate it up. And I'm sure they're showcasing a lot of ships are going to be out soon. Because, you know, Fantasy Flights, you're going to be able to buy the Ghost, the little shuttle called the Phantom, this Imperial ship that has that you can dock other TIE fighters to. But it was great. The story was almost paint by numbers, but I didn't care. It was just great. So we're really loving Star Wars Rebels. And I think that's going to be it for my share time. Oh, one other thing on the sitcom tip. I've caught up on Modern Family and it's getting very stale. So I don't know if we're going to keep watching it.
What is it? Is it 3 seasons in, 4 seasons in? Where are they at about?
Modern Family, I think we're at 6.
Oh, 6. Okay.
Now, see, normally when you have a sitcom that hits syndication, usually right. That's supposed to be 5 seasons. But I think Modern Family started syndicating at 3. So it feels like it's been around forever. Yeah, so, you know, most of the kids are in college. I don't know. Maybe they're just, you know, in a slump or maybe I'm just getting too used to the characters or whatever. So, anyways. All right. So that is going to end my share time. So now this is part of the show where we are going to go to news. So here's where each host, if they see something interesting, hopefully to them and will be interesting for other people, they see something on the internet or they heard about on the radio or whatever, we're just gonna talk about it. All right. So, Art, what do you have first?
All right, first up, why Suicide Squad won't go after an R rating. So this is just blowing my mind. Suicide Squad is so different from other comic book movies, there's been a lot of speculation about whether or not it could be a rated R. Given that the villains are at the forefront, we can expect the protagonists to be much fiercer than the average heroes. Plus, director David Ayer's resume consists mostly of fare for the 17 years and older. However, it's official. Warner Brothers is now aiming for a PG rating with the 20th blockbuster. So I just thought it was interesting that in this particular show, that they would go for a PG 13 rating. I thought they would go more along the lines of what they're doing with Deadpool. You know, something as a more just pushing that that type of envelope. You know, they say they're trying to market towards a kid's audience. And, I mean, yes, you want your comic book movies to be kid-friendly, but with a name like Suicide Squad, what are they really thinking?
Yeah, I would agree with that, especially some of the characters. I don't know, is Harley Quinn kid-friendly?
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's a misstep for them. And the DC side of the movie house has been misstepping pretty much all along the way.
Right. Well, you know, just like, you know, Disney's trying to pull back some of the things with Leia's character. Maybe they're just trying to...
That's different, though. You know,
widen the appeal.
Yeah, but I see that as different when you consider, you know... It's Disney, and Star Wars has always been more family-friendly. We're talking about some very mature comics as far as the Suicide Squad and Deadpool. You know, take a little sidestep to do something a little darker that lines up better with the original vision of the comic.
Right.
So, we'll see.
Okay, well, since we're talking about Star Wars... Here is probably not too much of a big Star Wars story, but what other movies are going to be coming out that weekend that Star Wars is going to be in the theater?
Oh, do tell.
Well, according to Box Office Mojo, the Tina Fey, Amy Poehler comedy Sisters, the Chinese fantasy movie Mojin, The Lost Legend, the Hungarian World War II drama Son of Saul, and Alvin and the Chipmunks Road Trip. I'm sorry, Road Chip will be out in the theater. So kind of like how we're talking about Beast of No Nation, about why would they do this? Well, here's some possible reasons that they would put it the same weekend. Number one, their target audience doesn't really overlap with Star Wars, so they're not in direct competition, like Son of Saul, the Hungarian World War II drama. Number two, they're already seen as inevitable flops and are being buried on a dud release date. Okay, well, I would hope not with the Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, but I definitely would say Alvin and Chipmunks, maybe. Number three, distributors are hoping that when audience arrive at theaters and discover that Star Wars is sold out, they'll overflow into another movie instead.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's
so that's
happen.
Probably Chipmunks are probably going to get a big bump from that. So, yeah, and the next week, you're going to have the Point Break remake, Quentin Tarantino's The Hateful Eight, which I have another news story about, and then The Revenant, which I don't know too much about The Revenant. I think that's the one with DiCaprio. As an action movie that plays the 1980s nostalgia, Point Break will probably suffer the most by going up against Star Wars, although its producer tried to frame this release date as a great opportunity because it allowed more time to work on visual effects. In reality, having your release date delayed to overlap with Star Wars and Tarantino is probably a kiss of death.
Yeah.
For the actors and filmmakers, this could be a silver lining. If they're film bombs, we know the excuse.
Right.
So, yeah.
That director is he's the poster child for Optimist.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, very much so.
Okay. Next up, back on to continuing with comics on my end. Thor 3 may have a female villain. So word is they might be leaning in this direction, as the main protagonist could be a female character. Thor movies have featured women like Jane Foster, Darcy, Sif, Frigga. So for the villains, it's been a real sausage fest, though. So they are looking at Thor's lineup of villainesses and seeing who could the possible protagonist be. They came up with three names. One, the Enchantress.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was interesting. The one I actually like better, though, is Hela, the goddess of death,
mm-hmm.
For Asgard. And they speculated that that could be an interesting little step into for the death character who Thanos is trying to woo with his whole... Yeah, the entirety of his being, I think, is not an overstatement. At least as far as the comics go. I don't know what they're going to do with the cinematic universe, but I just thought that was an interesting tie. And the last one was Blood Axe. Blood Axe, I'm familiar with the character. I remember I followed Thor a little more closely in the 90s. And that one's not as interesting. That's more of like kind of what they did with Bane in the Batman movie that had both Mr. Freeze and Poison Ivy and way too many villains running around. And Blood Axe is just more of a heavy. But Hela really has my my interest. I'd like that to be the truth. But we'll see.
All right. For my next news story, I have a question for you, Art.
Okay.
What's your favorite movie soundtrack?
There's a few, but top of the list probably is Blade Runner with the Vangelis soundtrack. A close second and third, I like both the Fifth Element and Tank Girl. Those were two other soundtracks that I ran out and bought immediately after watching the movie.
Tank Girl, huh?
Yeah, Tank Girl.
All right. Well, those are some pretty fringe soundtracks, if I don't say it so myself. So, this news article has to do with Lord of the Rings voted best movie soundtrack of all time. All right. It says one of the most recognizable scores in movie history. And it's been voted the best movie soundtrack of all time by classic FM listeners for the sixth year running. Howard Shore's iconic soundtrack beat John Williams' score for Schindler's List at 2, and Zimmer's work on Gladiator at 3 of the Movie Music Hall of Fame poll. However, Williams had the most scores in the top 10, with his work from Star Wars, Harry Potter, and Jurassic Park sitting at 4, 7, and 9.
Nice.
John Barry also ranked in the top 10 with the soundtracks for Out of Africa and Dances with Wolves. Ennio Morricone's The Mission score and Klaus Badelt's work on Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl completed the top 10. I was surprised about Pirates.
That is actually a good score.
No, I own it, but there's not a lot to it.
It's very orchestral, yeah, and very moving. It's good music. It's very recognizable. Very swashbuckly. It carries its theme across well, I think. We talked about, I don't know if you listened to the episode yet, but Dice Tower does an episode about music and games.
Yeah, I did listen to that one.
Okay.
And I instantly wrote down like six more that they didn't mention.
Nice.
You know, a couple of them, I don't think there's a game to put to it, but I just like the soundtracks.
Right. I used to role play with a buddy of mine, and he loved putting on, when he was GMing, he put on music in the background, and a lot of his go-to music was the Conan music. The soundtracks for the two Conan movies. I like that.
Just to finish up, the list of 100 top scores were based on listeners' votes. James Horner, who died in a plane crash in June, saw his soundtracks to Avatar, Apollo 13, Braveheart, and Titanic rise in the chart. And Zimmer's work on Interstellar was the highest new entry at 43. All right, Art, what do you got next?
All right, big things we learned about Lupita Nyong'o's character. So,
I'm just laughing because this is just one of the dozens of stories speculating about the new movie, but go ahead.
Yes. I know, I can't help myself. But what I thought was interesting was that her character has already been pictured on the on one of the posters. And it zooms in, it shows the little character who is literally right above BB-8 and next to R2. And it looks like a rather small, childlike character from the sizing compared to the other things around her, but you know, those perspectives are all off. So it'll be interesting to see. And it talks about her being in the voiceover of the latest trailer, which we talked about ad nauseum. And so I don't know. It caught my eye. And you know, we've had a lot of speculation about that character. I just wanted to throw that out there. There's more information about Lupita's character, and I can't wait. Okay, sir, take us home.
All right. Well, no, I got a couple more things to talk about now since you were talking about that. All right.
Sure.
Okay, so the weekend after Star Wars is when The Hateful Eight comes out, which is the Western being directed by Tarantino. And, you know, Tarantino has said that he hates digital projection.
Right.
If I was going to watch digital projection, I could just watch it at home. So apparently, and if you remember when Interstellar came out, there was kind of a push to watch it in 70 millimeter. And so Tarantino and the Weinstein Company, they're actually making a big push to that first weekend to be able to watch it in 70 millimeter at your theater. Now, this is newsworthy because there's very few theaters that still can show 70 millimeter.
Right.
Like when Interstellar made that big push, it was in 11 theaters that you can see it in the 70. And before that, The Master in 2012 was available on 16 70 millimeter theaters. It says here, no film has opened with 100 70 millimeter prints since 1992. They're going to go with 96 for Hateful Eight.
Wow.
And so basically what that means is that the Weinstein Company is picking theaters and they're buying a 70 millimeter projector.
Wow.
For the theater.
Interesting.
Not only that, they're going to be training the staff on how to use it.
Right. Well, you have to. You got to go back to the projectionist and blah, 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 blah. And that's interesting. I thought there was some relation between 70 millimeter and IMAX, but apparently I have no clue what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I think IMAX is just a different format.
Right.
So theater owners are probably projecting that it's going to cost them $60,000 to $80,000 per screen to get the system up and running.
Right.
Not counting labor. Says here it's not just Hateful Eight is not just any 70mm movie. It is only the 10th feature to make use of shooting in Ultra Panavision, an ultra wide format that'll actually have the technology's largest opening in terms of screen numbers. The lenses produce an extremely wide image. Think of mid-century films like Ben-Hur or It's a Mad World. Before The Hateful Eight, the last Ultra Panavision was Khartoum in 1966. It's best known among cinephiles for its unusual dimensions. It has an aspect ratio of 2.76 to 1, which means that the image has 2.76 feet of width for every foot of height. By contrast, most American movies are projected at 1.85 to 1 or 2.39 to 1. Mr. Cutler said that there would be space at the top and bottom of most of the screens that show The Hateful Eight, so you're going to get the letterboxing.
Interesting. Very interesting.
And they said, after this is all over, Weinstein Company is going to have a lot of 70mm projectors, so if you want to buy one, you can probably find one on eBay. No, I don't know. And he said, but when it expands its release in January, that then it'll be all digital projection.
Right.
So if you really, and oddly enough, they think there's been a kind of a resurgence because Jurassic World had some shots that were shot in 65mm. So now that all these projectors are bought, they're thinking maybe, you know, future movies might go this way. Who knows? I think it's probably most a pipe dream.
Yeah, it's really, they're not going, it's the wrong way for technology. I mean, I just don't see it going back. They're pushing as hard as they can. It's just not going to work.
Right. All right. Okay. You have anything else?
No, I do not. This does have me more interested in seeing that movie, trying to find it in that format.
Yeah, no, it, they released the trailer and it looks good. And I don't think necessarily the story is that what's going to attract me. It's just the cast is going to be really good.
Right.
It's really good. Okay. Here's some mini news bites, and I'm just looking at the Hollywood Reporter, the Heat Vision blog, where they kind of focus on sci-fi and fantasy, and just counting. I'm just going to go through all the different Star Wars stories that they have. Star Wars, who is Supreme Leader Snoke? Talking about Andy Serkis's character. Lupita Nyong'o's mystery Star Wars character has been in plain sight for weeks. Star Wars The Force Awakens trailer gets mashup with It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. X-Men Apocalypse teaser to debut with Star Wars The Force Awakens in theaters. I'm actually excited about that. Star Wars Force Awakens new details center on Empire's propaganda war. Harrison Ford promises that the older, wiser Han Solo is still a rogue. I'll actually have to go down to, two stories to Han Solo's 2018 spotlight will be Lawrence Kasdan's last Star Wars movie. Mystery Science Theater 3000 revival in the works.
Yeah.
Shout Factory has acquired the rights to the cult hit and has launched a Kickstarter campaign with creator Joel Hodgson for a new incarnation of the series. Star Wars promotes K-12 computer science with code campaign. Anna Kendrick cameos in new Star Wars Battlefront trailer. J.J. Abrams, Star Wars The Force Awakens is a self-contained story. So, yeah, it's just the full court press. Oh, and the last one. All the way back from November 6th, Star Wars International trailer. Hope is not lost and other hints. So, yeah, it's all over the place, man. Not that I'm complaining. Standpoint, Marvel to offer free Star Wars sampler in advance of Force Awakens opening. 56-page issue will preview debut issues of the comic company's successful Star Wars line. So, yeah. All right, so I think that's enough for news. And I think that's going to be it for this episode of Backseat Box Office. So, everybody, thank you for listening. And take care of yourself, and we'll catch you next time. Art, say goodbye.
Goodbye.